Lady Limerick, Reel 6.
Was the procedure for bullet wounds just taking off the old dressing, putting on a new one?
Yes, very largely, yes. And then you have all these hot fermentations going on, and not so much as was in England and France, they had these linseed poultices. They used to do the most primitive things, and cupping. We didn't do that at all in England. That's why methods varied very greatly. We used to have linseed poultices and those sort of things at times. But and hot fermentations, a lot of those. But otherwise, it was renewing dressings mostly.
Did you have many amputations?
Oh, a lot, yes. Yes, and you get these double amputations too, which are very, very tricky, sad things. And of course, they didn't have all these things, that the amenities that they have now, and more comfortable ways of looking after them and positioning them and so on. And neither did they have all these wonderful things now that you can read a book and turn over the pages by blowing through a pipe and all that kind of business, which didn't exist in those days at all. They didn't have anything like as easy a time from that point of view. They were very much their own devices. But the men were awfully good to each other. I mean, they always used to entertain each other and help each other. They were frightfully good. I must say, it's the most wonderful cooperative spirit they all showed.
Did the nurses or the other patients shy away from amputees at all?
Oh, I don't think so, no. Oh, no, no. Oh, no. Oh, no question of that. No, I don't think it made any difference how badly a man was injured or disfigured to those who were looking after them.
Was it difficult for them to recover psychologically after an amputation, regardless of how well they were recovering medically?
I wouldn't have thought it was as difficult in those conditions as it would be in ordinary civil life, because there were so many more of them. They weren't conspicuous in a way. I mean, they were so accustomed, really, to these practically bad wounds of varying kinds and amputations that I don't think anybody would have thought about it. And of course, there wasn't the same plastic surgery done then there is now. Admittedly, Gillis did his great work in the First World War, and he was father-in-law to McIndoe of the last World War, which, you know, did his marvelous work. And he it was, I think, who really started all this plastic surgery story, which made such an enormous difference. And that developed as the war went on. But I don't think there were the same number of bad burns and so forth as there were, and disfigurements therefore, as there were in the last war, when people got blown up in their tanks and that sort of thing. There wasn't nearly as much as that. But of course there was gassing. People badly gassed, and that was a terrible thing. Although I don't know that it was more, my husband was gassed, and he always said he thought it was more humane than being wounded. I suppose it depends on the degree, really. Puts you out of action probably quicker than a wound would. But then the lucky ones who didn't get too badly gassed were covered. The other ones, of course, were left with all sorts of lung complications and blindness too. That was the worst feature, I think.
Did you have any dental problems at your hospitals, or would they go elsewhere?
They would go elsewhere. I didn't have any really skilled dental treatment. They would have probably gone to a specialist hospital. No, I don't think we had any. I don't think we had anything. There is a thing I do remember was one case we had. This was when I was working in an auxiliary hospital. A chap who came in, I don't even know which hospital he'd come from, but he was always complaining of pains, and everything was done to him. He got a pain in his chest, he got a pain in his back, he got a pain in his tummy, and they took out everything they could. I think he had his appendix out and his tonsils out and everything. Still had this pain, and eventually some bright person thought of having him x-rayed. And they discovered that on one occasion he had been wounded in through the back, and they'd left the safety pin inside him, and that was removed. He ceased to complain of pain. But I suppose that sort of thing did happen occasionally. They, things disappeared and weren't noticed. I think it was on a swab or something like that that was left in.
Did your hospitals take all the cases that came on a convoy, or would the men have been separated and some with certain terrible problems be sent to a more specialised hospital?
Sorted out, I think probably some of them were, probably from when they left France. I expect if they were very specialised cases, they probably would have had a label on
perhaps
them.
Perhaps someone with his face blown away.
Yes, yes. But otherwise, I think it was just whatever the particular battle had been, they were just bundled into ambulances and eventually put on the trains and sent over and boat and ambulance boat, and that was that. You got whatever was there.
And how did a convoy, any particular convoy, happen to go to your hospital instead of any other hospital?
I think it was just according to the vacant number of beds and the number of casualties that had to be brought in. We would probably have an intake of perhaps about 40 or 50 at a time, several ambulance loads, as soon as we cleared out a sufficient number of beds. And we never had an empty bed for more than a few hours. I don't think it was just one thing after another. They went off to convalescent homes or back on leave, whatever it was. The next lot came in. And of course it was much more, we've seen nowadays, they have all these disposable syringes and this and that and the other. We had none of that. We had to boil them all up. Sterilise everything, because nothing was disposable. It all had to be used again. So in that way, of course, there was much more sort of donkey work to be done. All the beds had to be carbolized, and between the patients, one patient coming, another going. It always amused me that, because...
What was that involved?
Well, it was there. All the metal, the ironwork, the bedsets, all had to be washed down with carbolic acid, disinfectant. And that was had to be done, and the lockers all washed out inside between each... Whenever a patient went out before the next one came in, of course, they had clean sheets, because that same, it always amused me, had the same blankets. And after all, blankets probably harbour germs more than anything else. Never seemed to worry about that. Yeah, I always thought it was an awful waste of time, so we had to do it, so that was that.
Were the sheets changed every day, or just every new patient?
Oh, well, they changed every new patient, and according to the subbing, sometimes they had to be changed quite frequently. But it just depended on the... They would be changed if it was a patient... didn't matter, it might be changed about once a week, whatever it was. But otherwise, they might be changed once a day or twice a day or whatever was needed.
Was there any problem with lice?
Oh, yes. Crawling they were when they came in from the trenches. Oh, Friday was always, I still remember Friday's an awful day when it was heads and toes, heads and feet. Oh, we had to cut their toenails and delouse them. Oh, yes, and they used to come in with all sorts of awful skin diseases and things, too. I remember once we had a convoy came in the middle of the night. We had to get up in the middle of the night to receive it. And it was... we didn't have frightfully good lighting in the hospital. And one couldn't really see. Everyone could see what the patient was suffering from, by and large, but you could examine him very closely till next day, but he probably had a blanket bath. And we none of us noticed that one lot had come in. They were absolutely smothered in scabies. And I never thought very much about this. We took whatever treatment was necessary, and shortly afterwards I found I was getting awfully itchy fingers. I was terribly ashamed of this, and I knew I'd get absolute hell from a sister if I thought I'd acquired scabies from a patient. One of the young doctors was a friend of mine, so I went privily to see him, and I said, something awful's happened to me. What will I do? I've got scabies. And he said, look at my hands. And he was worse than I was. He dealt in the middle of the night to these convoys also, of course, hadn't noticed that they got it.
What was the treatment?
Sulfur ointment. Oh, it wasn't very bad. I mean, if you're moderately clean, you can get rid of it fairly quickly. It didn't have much of a hold. No one finds it at once.
Did any of the men have venereal disease?
I don't think we had an awful lot of those cases. We had a few, of course, but I don't remember a lot of them. I dare say they would have been sent to a special hospital if it had been known.
So when the patients arrived, they were practically straight off the fields of France?
Well, yes, but they'd of course they'd been through a cattle declaring station, and they would have been put onto an ambulance boat and then an ambulance train and everything else before they got to us.
But from what you've said, I understand that they still were dirty and covered
with blood. Yes, very often. Mm.
So what would you do when they arrived?
Oh, they would be given blanket baths to start with straight away, and then they'd be dealt with their heads if they had just known they had lice, and cleaned up as much as one possibly could at the earliest possible moment.
Would everyone drop what she was doing and rush when the new men came in?
Oh, yes.
Were there certain people?
Oh, no, they would. They probably would get the extra people on. I mean, somebody who was on night duty might be knocked up to come and help if it was going to be a very heavy case, a very heavy load of convoy coming in, so that the men wouldn't have to wait too long before they were dealt with and put in their beds and bathed and dressings done and everything else. So it was all hands to the pump.
Did the number of casualties increase with the major battles that we read about now as landmarks of the First World War?
Well, yes, but then you see the intake of the hospital was limited. I mean, we didn't have people sleeping on the floor and all that kind of thing, because they wouldn't send more than a certain number that we could take. So it was always kept full up. But you expected to get, of course, after you'd heard of a bad battle, you expected to get probably very serious casualties in, and would be told to clear out the people who otherwise might have stayed a bit longer. But they'd be sent on to convalescent homes or sent home quicker, because the beds were needed for more urgent cases. And the medical wards, we got quite a lot arriving with workers, all labelled. So they used to have labels on, say, what's the matter with PUO, pyrexia of unknown origin, or else GOK, God only knows. I mean, that was another one, which very wisely happened when they hadn't a clue. They didn't have time to find out, of course. Men ran a high temperature or something, and they just popped him in and hoped somebody else would find out.
How long would a man stay on average? Perhaps you don't remember exactly, but would it be a very short time, or would it be long as months?
Oh, it might well be, yes. Oh, yes, we had some in for several months, almost a year. I remember one or two terribly badly wounded men. I should think the average would be about a month. But in some cases, the turnover would be much quicker if it was something which could be dealt with fairly rapidly. And others would stay for quite a time.
How well did they have to be before they left you?
Well, they probably had to be ambulant, and they probably had to be able to move around. Unless they were going on to another specialised hospital or anything of that kind, they would be have to be able to fend for themselves up to a point. Medical cases, on the average, I should say, were discharged earlier, because as soon as they found out what was the matter with them and gave them adequate medication, they probably could pass on. The surgical cases, of course, some of them were immobilised for a very long time, and they had legs on traction and all that sort of thing, so they couldn't be moved for quite a time. But I should say that the average stay would probably be longer than it would be now with the more sophisticated treatment that they get, and also getting them up more quickly. I don't think they were ever pushed to get up immediately after an operation. I don't remember ever being told to try and get somebody up 12 hours after he'd had a serious operation, whereas of course now poor wretch should be put on his feet at once, I suppose.
What sort of anaesthetics were used?
Oh dear me, well, it was very largely, I think, ether. They gave them, they didn't have all this modern comforting treatment of giving you an injection before you're taken down to the theatre, so that you really don't know what's going on. And you don't realise something's been plonked over your nose, and it all happens. Then they were just wheeled into the theatre and given their anaesthetic then and there on the spot, seeing all these awful torture instruments all around them. And not thinking of the patient's feelings so much, but getting him on and to the job as quickly as possible. And of course they used to be terribly sick when they came round with the sort of anaesthetics that people had in those days. I couldn't tell you exactly what they were, because I'm not an expert on anaesthetics.
Did their relations visit them? Mothers, wives?
Oh yes. But of course it was difficult, because they came from all over the country. And so you didn't really know, I mean, they knew, of course, where the relations were, but it was very difficult for them to come down. For instance, they lived in the north, and nobody thought of sending the Yorkshire Light Infantry up, particularly up to York. They would be sent to Surrey or somewhere, because they happened to be in that convoy. But they would come down, nearly always if they could, to see them. Certainly if they were going to be long-stay patients, they would.
Was that a bother to you and the other nurses, having...
Oh, no. No, the only bother was when we were, when we had typhoid patients, and of course they were all ravenously hungry, because they were all kept on a meltdown, whatever it was, and the relations had all come and smuggled in plum cakes and donuts. And we used to have to examine the lockers very carefully when the parents had left, to see what they'd left behind, because that was really rather fatal.
Would it have been perhaps more trying for a patient to have a visit from relatives than it would be if he could just be with his own comrades who all had their legs off, rather than having mother come weep over him?
No, I think on the whole, you know, relations were awfully good. I don't think they did. You see, there was a completely different sort of spirit, I think, really, during the war. Everybody felt they'd got to keep their ends up, and they'd got to be as cheerful as they could. You got very little of this self-pity. There wasn't room for it, I think, really. People were much more realistic, I think. And, oh, no, they used to look sometimes. Of course, they didn't want to have them. They used to say, well, for God's sake, get rid of them. We don't want them. You know, we much sooner be left alone. But on the whole, they were always pleased to see them and cheer them up. And sometimes, of course, they were quite illiterate, and they used to ask one to write letters for them. And it was extraordinary things they would want to say. It was absolutely fascinating to see. Hello, Dinah.
Yes, okay, about
coming into our conversation.